first up. Every morning, come and hang on first up. The only show that brings the bang. It's first up.
You're listening to First Up on TSN 1050.
This is First Up.
You ain't first, you're last. It's hour three of First Up. You're on TSN 1050, streaming worldwide, tsn1050.ca, and on the iHeart Radio Canada app. Aaron Korolnik and Carlo Kuliakova with you. And Coco, we call today Tiger Tuesday, because he is indeed making his first public appearance, speaking at a press conference.
We're going live for that, right?
I don't know if we're going live. I don't know if we're going live.
What do you mean? Live Tiger News, 9 a.m. Hopefully he speaks for 56 minutes, and we see you Monday.
Exactly. We'll chat then. And I wonder what he's going to say. I mean, it'll probably be very much like the comments he made yesterday to Golf Digest, you know, being honest and frank with the status of his leg and how maybe never back to what he ever what he once was. I think that's pretty safe to say, considering the severity of the injury. But any breaking news from Tiger, and I'm sure he'll be asked, are you targeting April whatever, Augusta National, the Masters, the tournament he has been so successful at over the years, winning, of course, most recently in 2019, and that unbelievable performance. And, man, you watch the highlights from that still. I'll be honest. I got a little bit,
teary-eyed.
What's the word? Teary-eyed. I was trying to, you know, reminisce on the good times of Tiger after that interview yesterday. I had to go back and watch some of the highlights from the Masters. And, man, when he almost jarred it on, I think it's the 16th hole at Augusta National in the final round. Whew, man, what a moment. And you remember in that tournament we had in our golf pool. We had Tommy Fleetwood instead of Tiger, and if we had Tiger instead of Tommy Fleetwood,
we'd be rich.
Very well.
We'd be rich.
We wouldn't be doing this job. We would be living in Costa Rica on a, you know, on an island together. Well, probably not, but we'd have a lot more money than we would.
We'd be the We'd be the head coaches of USC, getting the spoiled treatment with the $100 million contract and all the bells and whistles that come with it. Mansions here, mansions there, private jet here, everywhere you want for anybody in your family. That's the treatment we'd have got if Tiger Woods would have been on our team.
I know. In that golf world. Well, I mean, you could be a college coach, LSU, USC, wherever. You could be a Major League Baseball player. You know, look at Corey Seager making $32.5 million a year for the next 10 seasons. Max Scherzer making $43 million a year from the New York Mets.
As a 37-year-old.
I know. He's still amazing, though. Keep in mind what he did for the Dodgers in the second half of last year. He's still one of, if not the best pitchers in baseball.
No doubt. But do you remember what happened in the playoffs? He got burnt out. This guy couldn't pitch anymore because he was burnt out from pitching so much. You got to think that's going to play a factor here, no? I mean, but think about what the Mets have just created. Jacob deGrom and Max Scherzer as your 1-2 guys.
As good as it gets. As good as it gets.
Wow. And I hope it's as good as it gets.
Do you remember what deGrom was doing at the beginning of last year? It was absurd. It was like 15 strikeouts every
single game. He was untouchable.
And then he got hurt and missed the second half. I think he still, he didn't pitch for the last 3 months of the year and still was, I believe, top 10 in Cy Young Award voting. That's how good this guy was in the first half. So as daunting a 1-2 as you will see in Major League Baseball, perhaps in a very long time, maybe I think of like maybe Randy Johnson and Curt Schilling. That's the type of 1-2 we're talking about with the Mets. But is that enough to make them legit contenders? A question we'll ask Buster Olney when he joins us shortly. But Marcus Stroman remains unsigned. We'll see what the deal is with him. Javier Baez sounds like he's going to the Detroit Tigers. Mm-hmm. And he was a name that was speculated for the Blue Jays to replace the void left by Marcus Semien. So the Jays, I mean, they have some options still. And listen, they can spread the money out that maybe they were prepared to pay Semien. Maybe he was $20, $22 million a year. Maybe $25 million a year. And we know that they went out and signed Kevin Gausman a few days ago, and it's perhaps most noteworthy that they gave Gausman, I've seen conflicting reports on this. Is it 5 years, 100? Is it 5 years, 110? I think there's some
incentives. 5 years, 110.
But I think there's some incentives attached to the 110 that, you know, could get it to that number. But you look at Robbie Ray, who we remember how, I mean, it wasn't that long ago where he was just absolutely incredible night after night for the Blue Jays, winning the American League Cy Young. And he got a deal that is not the same as Kevin Gausman got from the Jays, Robbie Ray getting from the Mariners, but not that dissimilar as far as term, like 5 years, the same term. Mm. The money, only $5 million different over the course of the 5 years. So I think a lot of people are very curious as to why that happened and what was the motivation for the Jays. And Buster will tell us, but I know you have your own theories, Coco. And I think you're spot on with your assessment of it. I mean, it's just pretty simple where it was one of those things where the Jays had two options that they really liked in Gausman and Ray, and they were just like, who wants it? And it seems to me that Gausman was the guy who took it first.
Look, I'm not going to sit here and criticize a guy that just signed for $115 million over 5 years, but when you evaluate the situation, I think Robbie Ray maybe misplayed his cards in his negotiations just because of where he ended up. You know, all the talk that we heard, and even Buster can confirm it, that the LA Angels was probably the preferred destination for him, closer to home, being in LA, and you know, that's probably what the Blue Jays factored in too. But the Blue Jays, look, they were prepared to go, you know, to his contract demands, and you can't blame the Blue Jays for getting, you know, their business done. They said, look, we obviously want Robbie Ray back. We're committed to paying what he just signed for, but if you're not committing to us in this contract right now, which is what I believe the Blue Jays proposed to him, we've got to move on and do our own business, and we're moving on to the next best guy. And really, when you think about it, you do the numbers. I think Brian Hayes did an unbelievable job yesterday comparing the numbers to Gausman and Robbie Ray's stats from last year. They are, I'm not even kidding, identical. So you're getting what Robbie Ray offered you last year, just in a right-handed pitcher. I mean, Gausman is a changeup and splitter guy, and Robbie Ray was a changeup and slider guy. So maybe that's the difference there. But they pitched the same amount of innings, they have the exact same ERA, they have the exact same strikeouts, the exact same innings pitched. So, yep. You know, you can't sit here and criticize the Blue Jays for doing what they did. They identified a player. They got the business because now you look at the rush right now, especially over the next 24 hours, you're going to see contracts going everywhere. And I think if you're Robbie Ray and you really wanted to come back to the Blue Jays, you probably misplayed your cards in the sense that you probably wanted to create a bidding war to jack up the price. And the Blue Jays said, look, we're moving on. And credit to them. And you know, you see the deal that he signs yesterday and you're thinking to yourself, this is one of two things. This is Robbie Ray, obviously not showing more of an urgency to sign, and Robbie Ray basically saying, all right, I'm moving on from the Blue Jays, because if he wanted that type of money, it was available here if he wanted to stay.
I think you're right, and we'll get Buster Olney's thoughts when he joins us next on the Ray versus Gausman situation, how Toronto could be approaching a replacement for Marcus Semien, and everything he's hearing around Major League Baseball about the CBA expiration tomorrow night at 11:59. Our MLB insider, Buster Olney, next on First Up. Major League Baseball is abuzz with news and rumors and speculation, so we are thrilled to be welcoming in our good friend from ESPN, their MLB insider, Buster Olney, here on First Up. Hey, Buster, how are you?
No, I'm doing great, guys. What's going on?
Oh, I mean, busy times.
Snowy
man.
Day in Toronto, you know, just enjoying life.
It is snowy. It's been raining money elsewhere, though.
Well done.
Why don't we start with Robbie Ray? And this is a situation here in Toronto that's a little bit confusing for some people, Buster, in that the deal that Robbie Ray signed, keep in mind, the reigning American League Cy Young Award winner, very similar to the deal that Kevin Gausman signed with the Jays. How close do you think the Jays were in on Ray, and what was the deciding factor or factors for him to leave Toronto?
Yeah, look, you know, the numbers were, you know, from what I understand, the numbers were, you know, were comparable. They were in the same neighborhood. Obviously, they had the money to spend. We know that from the Gausman contract. They know him. I will tell you, you know, that generally speaking, while, you know, he had a fantastic year, there was some trepidation about Robbie because of his history of up and down and the fact that he had had some struggles in the past. And the name you heard a lot was Patrick Corbin, you know, who was tremendous before he signed a free agent contract with the Washington Nationals. And he's been kind of a disaster since, you know, relying on that slider. I got to say, there just been so many players in play that I haven't gotten, you know, neck deep into the question of why Robbie, you know, chose the Mariners over the Blue Jays. But I think in the end, you know, they wind up with a very comparable pitcher in Kevin Gausman, who to me has a chance to be the latest version of Charlie Morton, who you guys remember at one point he was kind of a number four, number five type starter with the Pittsburgh Pirates, and then he found some changes in the last, you know, 6-7 years. He's been one of the best pitchers in baseball, and I think that's what Kevin Gausman has the potential for. He's got great stuff. No one's ever questioned his stuff. It's just a question of putting it together, and he's done that the last couple of years.
Yeah, no, Buster, I don't think anybody questions the deal for Gausman. I think a lot of Blue Jays fans are excited about you know, the signing and the potential of what he can bring to this group. I think just the questions maybe Blue Jays fans have are just the confusion around, again, the Robbie Ray signing. And help us understand it, which you just did, but do you think this was a situation, and Robbie Ray came out a week ago and said how he was enjoying the process, excited about talking to all these teams, and it was really going to take his time through it. Do you think maybe, you know, you got to give credit for the Blue Jays for doing their business, but do you think for Robbie's situation, he kind of misplayed his cards a bit and was too patient and maybe just let the deal that from the Blue Jays go away because he wasn't ready to sign, hoping that there was going to be more money and a better opportunity out there for him?
No, I don't think so. I think that the agents have all those very a lot of off-the-record conversations that probably began even back in August and September, getting an idea of where teams are going to be, you know, what their comfort level is going to be in terms of how much they're going to pay. So I don't think so. I'm sure that at some point that everybody was fairly transparent about where they were and what they're willing to pay.
So do you think this was a decision that Robbie Ray made to leave the Blue Jays then?
On the face of it, and again, I just haven't had a chance with, it's so many players signing. It feels like it's rapid fire. We're following up on specific, you know, which guy, like this morning, trying to chase down Javier Baez, the details of his contract. That was my first instinct, that in the end, when I saw that he landed with the Mariners for basically the same money that the Blue Jays gave another starting pitcher, that was my first instinct, that it was his choice to leave.
ESPN MLB insider Buster Olney is our guest here on First Up. You mentioned Javier Baez, who looks like he's heading to Detroit on a 7-year deal, and he was reportedly one of the targets for the Jays to replace Marcus Semien, who went to Texas on a 7-year deal. How do you think the Jays are approaching their issues in the middle infield, Buster? There's reports of Chris Taylor perhaps being one of their targets. What are you hearing on that?
Yeah, and I think here's the thing. If you're sitting in their position now, first off, I know this, just talking with sources the last 24 hours, they've got, you know, payroll flexibility. They can do something aggressive if they're able to do that. Chris Taylor would be perfect. I mean, he's right in the line of what we saw that they pursued last year with DJ LeMahieu. The question is, how nutty does the money get? And I do think that it's an uphill climb for the Blue Jays to sign Chris Taylor if they try to be aggressive with it. It would be very much like the LeMahieu thing. With the fact that the Dodgers have now lost Max Scherzer, they've lost Corey Seager, they value Chris Taylor, I suspect they may be sticking their elbows out a little bit as we move forward on any talks about Chris Taylor. So that would be a challenge. I know also internally, part of what the Blue Jays are thinking is this infielder that they're going to add. I think their preference would be that guy be a left-handed hitter. That's not make or break. If they could get someone like Chris Taylor at the price they want, then they would do that. And I also know that, a priority for them is starting pitching. And at this point, some of the best available options might be in trade. Chris Bassett is available. Oakland Athletics, he was great before he got hit by that line drive last year. Sean Manaea, Luis Castillo, You know, it's, the Reds have a couple of other starting pitchers out there as well. So, just my feel on it is I think that's the priority, is adding another starting pitcher for the Blue Jays.
Looking elsewhere, Buster, we saw Corey Seager sign a 10-year deal worth $325 Jeez. Yesterday. Carlos Correa yep. remains unsigned. What type of deal could he be looking at, and where do you think it could be as far as his destination?
And I think we talked about this in October, that it absolutely has looked like there are more buyers than elite shortstops available. So he's going to get a great contract. Some of the teams, including the Yankees, have absolutely balked at the idea of giving him, you know, $300 million. You saw what the offers were from the Houston Astros in the spring. I think it was $120 million, and they increased that to $180 million. He's going to get more than that, but although he's the youngest of those group of elite shortstops, he's also had a history of lower back issues, you know, through which he got, you know, treatment. Carl, you know better than I do, you know, to have an athlete who's that big, that young, starting to have lower back issues, that raises some red flags. Mm-hmm. They love his production. They love his defense. I just have a gut feeling that there's a chance he's going to wind up back in Houston. You know, Jim Crane, who's the owner of the Astros, has been out and been aggressive in the shortstop group. He wants one of these guys, and assuming that the Baez thing with Detroit happens, that probably means the last two most aggressive teams, you know, still, you know, on the board in terms of looking for somebody like that, or last two aggressive shortstops, Trevor Story and Correa. And I would not be surprised if the Astros wind up with one of those two guys.
Well, you talk about back injuries and back concerns. That didn't stop the Texas Rangers from signing Corey Seager to a massive 10-year, $32.5 million deal. I mean, what were your thoughts when you saw that deal, you know, break?
That Scott Boras, who represents both Marcus Semien and Corey Seager, he did a good job in identifying the one team that was going to go nutty, nutty, nutty this winter.
Wow.
Like the Texas Rangers were the one team that, you know, they basically decided, look, we're going to make sure that we wind up with some elite players. I mean, think about what's happened the last couple of days with the Texas Rangers. In committing those two contracts to Corey Seager and Marcus Semien, they spent more money or committed more money than they have doled out in payroll the last four seasons combined for their entire team. Okay, so they went into this winter saying, we're going to spend like crazy. Now, I will tell you, you know, and Corey Seager, you're right, he's had an injury history, but the perception of a lot of teams is that there are a lot of different injuries, and some are, you know, when he's been running, and some have been when he's been hit by pitch and that sort of thing, and so they're not related in the way that there's a larger concern about Carlos Correa's back. I would say this, I think there is an absolute at the back end of whatever labor agreement they have, you will see so many in the union, rank-and-file middle-class players, are going to get destroyed in free agency. Like, their numbers, they're going to pay for what's going on right now. The elite guys are getting huge contracts. The guys in the middle are absolutely going to get gouged and pay for these big contracts.
Well, you mentioned the word nutty. How about Steve Cohen and how aggressive he's been as the Mets general manager? I mean, the deal he got, he just signed Scherzer for, you know, 3 years, $43 million a year. I mean, I know he created a nice tandem there with him and DeGrom, but, you know, Scherzer's making more. He's poised to make more than you had tweeted this out this morning, more to make more than three teams, the Pirates, the Guardians, who are the team in Cleveland now, and the Orioles. How crazy of a situation is that?
It is the full manifestation of, I think, of the every hope of every Mets fan when Steve Cohen bought the team. You know, he basically has stepped in and overpaid on a group of players. And I don't mean that pejoratively. I just think that we know Max Scherzer. That's a huge contract for a 37-year-old pitcher.
Unbelievable.
And it is kind of crazy. And they signed Eduardo Escobar at third base above the market. Mark Canha, Starling Marte at 33 gets a 4-year, $78 million deal. and you know what? he's got the money. So while I think for a lot of teams, they would look at the Scherzer deal, the Marte deal as, boy, there's a lot of risk. There's no risk for somebody who's worth more than any other owner in baseball. So yeah. He's throwing a ton of money at this. That's the best path for the Mets to actually get better this year, and that's great. But, you know, if you go from 30,000 feet and look at it from the perspective of the sport at large, it's getting crazy. You've got, you know, I think we're seeing the have and have not camps even more well defined, not only among teams, but among players, right?
That's crazy.
It's a lot of money, and I'm sure their owners with other teams just gritting their teeth because this is the Steve Cohen that they feared when they approved him to become owner of the Mets.
Buster, the CBA expires tomorrow night between the Major League Baseball players and the owners, Major League Baseball as a whole. Everyone's expecting a labor stoppage. Can you explain exactly what the major differences are between the two sides and why this lockout is happening?
It's money. It doesn't seem like it.
Yeah, and by the way, talk about mixed messages on both sides, right? Where you're going to tell casual baseball fans, yeah, they're having big disagreements about money. The head of the Players Association, Max Scherzer, just got more money than any player in the history of baseball. Okay. Here's the difference. You know, the players want more money. They also do not want to have anything in a system that they view as being a salary cap. I think they want to get younger players paid more sooner. So Vladimir Guerrero Jr. has success early in his career. They want that guy to get paid more. They want them to get to arbitration sooner. They want him to get to free agency sooner. Here's what I find to just be mind-boggling and shocking about what the Player Association is doing. It doesn't seem like that they have placed a huge emphasis on anti-tanking measures. If you want to talk about the money that's being taken out away from the players, who generally speaking have seen their share of the pie shrink over the last 10 years, if they want to restore that money and a lot of that going to the middle class of players, they need to get teams like the Orioles and the Pirates and the Guardians spending. And they seem to be protecting a system that works well for the upper 3% of the rank and file among their players, but doesn't work for a lot of guys. Think about these numbers, guys. The free agents who you could define as the middle class, their average contract in 2014 in the winter, that winter, was $11.8 million. Last winter, that went down to $6.2 million for that group. So those guys are getting killed while we're still getting these mega deals for guys like Corey Seager and Max Scherzer.
Well, Buster, I think I speak for Carlo when I say that at ESPN, you should be getting the Max Scherzer deal as far as best in the business. We appreciate your time.
I'll take it.
Thanks, guys. All right, that is MLB insider Buster Olney. You talk to guys like Dregs and Bob McKenzie, LeBron, Chris Johnson on like days like Free Agent Frenzy. It's just crazy the stuff that they have going on with their phones and just how busy they are, all the calls and texts they receive, emails. I'm sure, Buster, the last 48 hours has been the exact same, and we thank him for his time and his insight. Because
it's going to get even more nutty today, though.
Oh, I think that's fair to say. And, yeah, I think like trades and there's some big deals waiting to be signed. I mean, you would imagine a lot of the big names will go off the board today. Correa will be signed, Marcus Stroman, because you need to have a physical to lock in that contract, right? So today is basically the deadline because you can't sign a deal tomorrow and then also fly wherever you need to go before 11:59 and the CBA expires. So a day ahead.
Think about the mindset of the players, too. It's like everybody is anticipating that baseball is going to go into a lockout. Okay, if anything other than that would be a miracle. But if you're a player right now, you're calling your agent and saying, look, I don't care what it takes. I need a contract signed before 11:59 tonight because I'm jumping on a plane after this and I'm going to go to a beach and hit up a bar and drink pina coladas knowing that I can sit back and enjoy that I just got my deal signed and just wait for these other guys to catfight about money. Do you think you want to be a guy right now going into tomorrow with the the thought of leaving all that on the line and having to stress out the next couple of months?
It's hard to say. I mean, yeah, right? You're right. It's one of those things where you don't know when baseball will return. You don't want the uncertainty hanging over you.
No.
About where you'll sign.
Trust me, I've been there.
No,
It's stressful.
Sure.
It's stressful.
What percentage does Scott Boras get of these contracts? Is it 3%?
I mean, I know the average percentage in hockey is 3%, but I don't
Boras
know.
Boras is like, must have $100 mil in the bank easy, right?
Dude, he's probably making $100 mil off of the contracts he's signing this year.
Like, but you don't get it off of, and your knowledge from hockey. I mean, I guess, let's say Marcus Semien's Boras' agent. Boras represents Marcus Semien, right? So yeah. Semien signs the $175 million contract. Would he get his 3% every year? Would he get it up front? How does that work?
I know for hockey players, it was 3% every year of your salary. Okay. So you'd have to cut your agent a check after or in the middle of your pay periods to pay off, you know, his fee. I don't know how it works in baseball or the NFL because these guys get a lot of bonus money, right? So
yeah, that's true. That is true.
I don't know.
Fascinating stuff. Some big numbers.
But it's not just the contracts. The contracts are, at least what I know from hockey, I don't know how it works and how it's structured in the NBA and NFL and Major League Baseball, is the agents make their small percentage off of the contracts, but they make their big percentage off of the endorsements. So the endorsement deals that these guys are getting, I think that's 20% they get off of those deals. So yeah, that's where they're making – you sign some big-name free agents and they've got endorsement deals, you're cashing in pretty good.
The Kevin Gausman GoDaddy commercials will be coming down the pipe anytime. They'll probably start filming later this month, maybe in the month of December.
And just think if you're Scott Boras, and every time free agency comes around, okay, every year you've got most of the high-paid guys. And you're sitting there at your desk enjoying your coffee one morning, and you see a phone call on your phone. It's Marcus Semien calling. You're thinking to yourself, yes, another payday for a new client of mine. Because literally, like, that's why Semien hired
up a dollar sign.
Semien hired Boras so he can get his payday, and that's exactly what he got him. Buster just said it to us that Scott Boras, he searches out the market to see who's going to be the nutty owners out there, and clearly he found it with both Seager and Semien with Texas.
20 fingers sending me this. In 2020, Scott Boras negotiated 13 contracts in excess of $100 million, five of which above $200 million, two above $300 million, $3.2 billion for his clients, netting his corporation more than $160 million in commissions.
Unbelievable.
That was
last year.
That was last year. This year, it's probably going to be very similar. So, man, my next life, I need to be in the Scott Boras Corporation. Because
right.
That is a license to print money, but he's the best in the biz for a reason, and he put it on full display once again so far.
Does he represent NFL players too?
I think it's just baseball.
Who's the big agent in the NFL that players go to?
There's a few, but 20 fingers. We'll get some information on that.
He just shared it right now.
We'll get some information on how the NFL, but I mean, it's not the same level of financial fortitude there as far as how some of these baseball players are getting paid, and Boras is reaping some serious benefits. A man who has signed some.
You should have hired him as your agent when you negotiated your deal for this show.
Let's just say I had a very good agent. His name is Aaron Korolnik, and wow, what a deal I negotiated. Commission.
That's not
100%.
Good, eh?
Drew Rosenhaus is the guy.
Oh, of course.
Of.
Yes.
In the NFL, yes.
Celebrating Hanukkah for sure. He is the Ari Gold of NFL
Chanukka.
Agency. Chanukka. We'll welcome Cam Jansen to the show on the other side. We'll talk about his experiences negotiating contracts. Was it a very Scott Boras-esque ordeal for Cam Jansen when talking to Lou Lamoriello?
Seriously?
With the Devils?
Cam,
oh, yeah.
Cam Jansen? Cam was like, what? Yeah? Oh, sure. Yeah, give me. I'll take it. Where do I sign?
You want me on the team again? All right. Sweet. And we'll talk about the Brendan Lemieux, Brady Tkachuk situation. We know Cam has a very close bond with the Tkachuk family, so maybe he's got some insights into how they're processing that situation from over the weekend. That's coming up with Cam Jansen on First Up next.
Happy Chanukka.
Oh, yeah. Get the headbanging going. Raised the arms.
I would do some headbanging, but I hurt my neck sleeping. You know, like when you have the kink in the neck and you can't really move. Yeah, always. It's like three times a year. But any other time, I'd be headbanging for our next guest. This is Cam Jansen from the Cam and Strick podcast. How are you, my man? I know last time we spoke last week, you were dealing with some COVID symptoms. How's the recovery going?
Oh, I'm fine, man. Dude, I've been through so much with, getting sick over the years, you know, with the painkillers and stuff like that. It doesn't bother me that bad. But my wife, on the other hand, you know, she's a little bit, I get worried about her. But we chilled all weekend. We put up Christmas decorations all weekend.
Nice.
We didn't get to see our family. Yeah, we didn't get to see our family for Thanksgiving, but it's like, whatever. My parents live down the road. I can go stop by their house anytime. So we just enjoyed ourselves. I had symptoms for a day, and then I was completely fine. My wife's still kind of lethargic. But other than that, man, we're good to go.
Good to hear, buddy. Good to hear. Well, gents, a lot going on in the world of hockey. You know, we see some suspensions. We see the Maple Leafs taking over the conversation about being best team in the league. Before we move on to the fun stuff, just quick thoughts. What's your impressions from afar about what you're seeing with this Maple Leafs team?
Oh, well, they're fun to watch. I'll tell you that right now. I mean, you know, haven't we seen this for the past, you know, 5 years or so? Like, they're good. We talked about this. They're gonna win a lot of games. Yeah. They're going to beat teams 8-0. You know, Austin Matthews and Mitch, they're going to put on complete shows, and everybody's going to go crazy. And we know it's going to. Look at their lineup; they're deep, they're loaded, and they have so much skill. So it's like, as a Toronto fan, just appreciate that. Like, you got to still, whether you want to look to the playoffs now or not. Like, we're not there yet, but as of right now, as a Toronto Maple Leafs fan, and you go to the game and you spend money, you're seeing an unbelievable product. So enjoy it. And then once the playoffs come, we'll deal with it when we need to deal with it. But as of right now, good for you, good for the fan base. And again, that team is fun to watch.
Enjoy it. At least fans can enjoy anything. I mean, it's
I know.
It's constant pain. It's constant doubt. There is no fan base in professional sports with less confidence in their team than the Toronto Maple Leafs. And perhaps that's deserving. I mean, you consider everything that's happened over the past 17 years since they last won a playoff series, the longest drought, Stanley Cup drought in a long time. I mean, there's so many fans out there, Cam, who look at this team and just say, I don't care. Talk to me in April. And is that fair to this Maple Leafs team? It's probably not. I mean, they've won 14 of 16, but I think it's also just a reality of the situation with 5 straight years of Matthews and Marner, no playoff series wins. So, you, on one hand, you have to enjoy how great this team has become.
Of course,
on the other hand,
man.
You have to be skeptical about what this really means when it's all said and done.
Worry about it when the time comes.
Yeah. You could do both. You could enjoy it and still have concern. Why wouldn't you? Hey, look, I'm around Blues fans all day, every day, everywhere I go. Just remember what they went through, too. You know, like the Blues went to the playoffs 25 years in a row and didn't make it. Now, they got kind of far. They went to the second round. They won the President's Trophy in 99 with Pronger and McInnes. And I remember this. They won President's Trophy, and they had the eighth seed going against the San Jose Sharks, I believe it was. And I remember the next day, once when they won the President's Trophy, they went on St. Louis Post-Dispatch and had all the players around, and they put a little symbol where the Stanley Cup should be and said, place cup here. And I remember looking at my dad, and my dad goes, yeah, they just jinxed themselves. And, of course, they lose in the first round of San Jose. So here's my point. My point is the Blues fans have been through hell and back about not winning the Stanley Cup and things like that. So there's still a comparison there. I understand it. You could do both. You can enjoy watching Brett Hall with a mullet cruising around in the 90s scoring 86 goals. You can enjoy watching superstars and winning games and stuff like that, but also realize and be realistic that, hey, this doesn't mean a damn thing until we get to the big dance and you actually make some moves there. And so it's a hard balance, and I don't blame the Leafs fans for being cranky here and there, but right as of right now, just enjoy watching Austin Matthews do his thing.
don't need the ghosts of Roman Turek resurfacing in with Blues fans. That playoff series, that goal from Owen Nolan from center ice, just haunting memory.
Hey, didn't Mark Bergevin
score in his own net? Yeah. Well, speaking of Mark Bergevin, not employed anymore, getting axed from the Montreal Canadiens. What are your thoughts on all the surprising moves you saw in Montreal over the weekend?
I mean, man, Montreal's so hard to deal with. Like, that whole, just the whole way of, if you're a GM and you're in a hierarchy position with the Montreal organization, that's got to be one of the most stressful jobs ever. Not to mention with the Toronto Maple Leafs, too, don't get me wrong. But anywhere up there, it's just very stressful. Look at Bergie. He used to have big arms. All the stress that came about him, now his arms are getting tiny. His hair is getting gray. It just wears you out. I want to give a little shout-out to Scotty Mellenby. We love him down there. I know they said one thing to him, and I guess they took it back of taking over as GM. I don't know the ins and outs of it, but I want to give him a little shout-out. He's a smart dude. He's a hell of a hockey player when he played and a great leader. So he's gonna bounce back summer. But, man, I don't know what to say. They're not fun to watch, I'll tell you that. As to being a Montreal Canadiens fan right now, too. Like, you know, their team
just went
so
to the Stanley
bad.
Cup They're final boring. Last year, too.
I know. But, look, I don't count last year. I'm sorry. I'll say it. I just don't. Last year was still kind of goofy. They made the Stanley Cup final. Like, I don't know. It is what it is. Carey Price was unbelievable. Don't get me wrong. I love that guy. But they aren't fun. They're kind of wimpy. They don't stick up. Somebody had a tweet yesterday where somebody just gets piled. Oh, Jake Allen gets run over. And, like, just no one does anything. And you're, like, bottom of the league. Like, the least you could do is stick up for your damn goalie. That drives me crazy. So not only are they losing games, they're kind of wimpy, too. And that's not a good combination.
No, definitely not. Cam Jansen is our guest from the Cam and Strick podcast. Cam, we've been talking a lot about the Brady Tkachuk, Brendan Lemieux thing, and we're awaiting what type of suspension Lemieux will be receiving from the NHL. But you've been involved in so many fights and tussles and scrums over the years. Has anyone ever tried to or actually bit you?
Nah, dude. No one's going to bite me. I don't – no one really did dirty things to me. One time in 04 – during the lockout year, you know, Carlo, when we're playing in the American League with monsters cruising around everywhere you look. Jan Platil from the Binghamton Senators. His name is Jan Platil.
I know him very well, yes.
He tried to kick me. We're getting into a brawl. It was, remember I told you, Christian night, where, you know, with a bunch of little kids there, and we get into a big brawl and scare everybody out of the building. Well, my jersey comes off. My helmet came off. And I'm in a brawl trying to fight him, and he tried to kick me.
What?
He tried to kick, and there's video of it on YouTube. He tried to kick me in my face while the refs were holding me back to protect himself. And that was kind of awkward. I think he got like 6-7 games or whatever. But with the biting thing, let me just say something with this. There might be a little bit more to the story than that. I would say to you, headbutting, slashing the face, all that biting.
Spitting.
It's just so bad to do. What's that?
Spitting in someone's face,
licking. That's just so weird. It's so bizarre. You don't do that. The only time I'm going to bite somebody, and I'm not going to lie to you, if I'm in a scrum and I got people on my back and the refs have my arms and somebody's taking their finger and gouging my eye out, I'm going to bite you. No, I'm serious. If you have your finger in my eye and no one can see it, or you're trying to fish hook me, and you stick your fingers in my mouth, which is disgusting to do anyway, I'm going to bite you. Now, I'm telling you, I think there might have been something going on underneath that scrum for him to do it. Now, if there wasn't, then Brendan Lemieux, you should be he's going to be suspended no matter what. But that is gutless. You're an idiot. Stop doing that. I just think there might be a little bit more to the story. But again, biting's bad. But if you fish hook me or try to gouge my eyes out, you're getting bit.
Well, look, if a guy's sticking his fingers in your mouth or, you know, doing stuff like that, I think there can be an explanation to it. But I don't know based on the video we've seen, if there was anything close that warranted what Lemieux did. But you talk about, you know, stuff behind the scenes. How surprised were you about how honest Brady Tkachuk was about his explanation afterwards, basically calling Lemieux a brickhead, saying that nobody in the league likes him, his teammates don't even like him, he doesn't even deserve to be in the league. What did you make? I mean, you know the Tkachuk brothers really well, and Matthew was asked about it the other day, and he didn't say much, but basically agreed with everything Brady was saying. So what do you make of some of the comments that were made about Lemieux?
Hey, you know what? The worst singing you called and chirp. I mean, Carlo, we've all gotten called crazy stuff, right? Like, damn, you suck. And I'm like, okay, yeah, you're right. Ah, you did it. I'm like, okay.
Pigeon.
Is you suck the worst thing you've heard, Cam, when you're tied on the ice?
To be completely honest with you, I never got chirped that bad by guys. I mean, here and there. But if you chirp me, and I know you're kind of a... You're just kind of like your own guy. I would chirp you. The worst chirp to get is my point. Here's what I'm trying to say is, if you call the bad teammate, that is the worst. Like, oh, yeah, oh, you make $9 million. Yeah, your teammates hate you. There's rebuttal of that.
Very true.
If you get called a bad teammate, you're like, oh, God, I don't care how much money you have. I don't care what.
No one likes you. Yeah.
No one likes you. You're like, oh, God. Like, that's. So that's a weird one. I don't know Brendan Lemieux. I do know his daddy, you know, Claude. We had him on the podcast. He's, you know, he's different, too. I mean, you want him on your team. He's an absolute winner. But Brendan's not a winner yet. So if you're a bad teammate, that's going to stick with you, and you got to change it somehow. But being called, that's the worst thing possible. I don't care if you make fun of my dogs, my family. I don't care. You call me a bad teammate, oh, boy.
What about if they made fun of your hairline?
Oh, well, how can you not? Oh, it's getting bad, Carlo. Oh, the cul-de-sac.
You got to tell your wife to stop posting videos when you're sitting on the couch.
I know. She's got to stop doing that. I think she wants to show off my bald spot. Good Lord.
Oh, hilarious. Well, speaking of some other crazy incidents around the league, what did you make of the NHL fining Artemi Panarin for throwing a glove at Brad Marchand? I thought it was hilarious what he did.
Oh, it is. I love Panarin's awesome, man. We actually had David Quinn out, who coached him in New York, and we talked about Panarin, how cool he is. Look, here's the deal with that. People are texting me too, like, "Well, how are they going to find the same to Tom Wilson after that incident last year with the Rangers?" And they're finding our team, Panarin, for throwing a glove. I'm like, well, you don't throw stuff at people. It's not like a hockey play. You don't throw. You don't want people throwing stuff. It looks kind of corny. Doesn't do anything. So you get fined. Now, Tom Wilson, he got jumped in a scrum, and your initial reaction is to throw the guy off you. We talked about that a million times. Now, did he go too far with it? Yeah. You don't flex to the camera and do that kind of stuff because it always comes back and bites you in the butt. But, yeah, one was somewhat of a hockey player, and the other one was Panarin throwing something at somebody. You don't do that. Now, did I chuckle at it? Absolutely. But who cares? He's making 11.5. Fine him. Doesn't matter. You know where that fine goes, by the way? You know, it goes to a good cause, man. It goes to all these guys that are struggling after hockey with addiction problems and all that stuff. So when you get fined in hockey, man, it doesn't just go to the ether. It goes to a great spot. So just all you guys remember that.
Cam, the story around Evander Kane seems to be taking another turn these days. The 21-game suspension he was given for fabricating a vaccine card is over. He's now been sent to the AHL, and there are reports that there are teams interested in trading for him. How do you think any team around the NHL would receive Evander Kane in their locker room at this point in time?
I mean, I wouldn't touch him. I just wouldn't. I mean, there's just too much. There's too much going on. It's not even about the gambling stuff. It's not even about the vaccination. It's just a million other things. Talk about being a bad teammate. Like, yeah, look, guys, we all know each other. Like, you do. The hockey world's small. We've talked about this before, Carlo, where, like, you remember you ask about somebody and you just know about them. Everybody knows somebody in hockey where you can get a good grip on who a person really is just by talking to other people, because we've all coexisted some way or another in some element, right? And I've never heard one good thing about the guy. Not one. Like, just not one thing. And then you look at all the weird stuff. Now, some of it might be true. Some of it might not be true. you know, whatever his ex-wife or his girl wife said about him. Like, do you believe all of it? I don't know. But some of it, you're like, good Lord. Like, it's just too much. Too much. I wouldn't touch him. I wouldn't. Even, I don't care how much salary they're going to keep. You're going to put him in that locker room? Now the media is going to be all over you. Now your whole half your city is going to be like, what? The fans are going to be pissed. It's just not worth it. It's just not worth it.
Look, I'm a big believer in giving people second chances in life, but he's been given more than second chances. This is like his fourth, fifth, sixth chance, and I don't know how much I believe that, you know, teams are interested in acquiring him, because, you know, yes, okay, you like the production on the ice, but are you willing to sacrifice, you know, the locker room, you know, by bringing him in? Because if you really want answers about whether or not you should bring in a guy like Evander Kane into your locker room, all you got to do is just talk to the people in San Jose.
Exactly.
I mean, they had a chance to bring him back, and clearly they want nothing to do with him, because there is just too much that surrounds this guy 24/7. And, you know, sometimes, you know, you just got to look past what he can do on the ice and more about the things that he's creating within the locker room. And right now, there's not much to like about what he's creating in any environment that he's in. And a lot of that is his own doing. I know he suffered through things. And like I said, I'm a big believer in giving people second chances. But the problem with this guy is that there's people that are willing to help him. He just doesn't want the help. That's basically what I know about it. And
I can't see any team picking him up. Now, you never know. You got a good leadership group and a team. Maybe they could take him over. And
San Jose was known for having the best locker room over the years with some of the leadership they have in there, and he couldn't make it work there. So,
I don't know. They didn't even stick up for him. They didn't even talk. They didn't. No, not one player.
Nobody did.
Stuck up for him.
Nobody did.
Dude, that's a sign, man.
Yeah.
That's a sign. Look, I messed up before. I've had my own problems. Like you, I've known guys that have problems, man, but they're good guys. Like they're good guys. Maybe they're misunderstood here and there. I play with guys that I heard, like, man, guys didn't like him in this locker. I'm like, oh, okay. And I meet the dude, and I'm like, oh, he's great. He's got to understand his personality. I just don't think that's the case with him. I think he's just in his own little world. It's all about him. He's got so much distractions going. Like, think about all that stuff piling up on you. He just needs help. Like,
I agree.
He just needs help, man. Like, gosh, I put a bad tweet out, and I got people chirping me. I crawl into a hole. Could you imagine what he's going through with his ex-wife, with the money situation, with all his ex-girlfriends who he's getting pregnant, all that? I mean, it's crazy. He needs to get help. He needs to have people around him. He needs to have a wake-up call and just completely sort his life out. And again, I'm not perfect, man. I hate being
Nobody
like a hypocrite. I hate when the hierarchy, oh, you'd be like me. No. That was a good teammate. And I crawled out of some major holes in my life, and I know how it's done. He just needs to sit back and look himself in the mirror and be like, dude, I got things I got to change.
Yeah, I agree.
Cam, thank you as always for taking the time this morning, my man. We appreciate it. What's coming up on the Cam and Strick podcast today?
Oh, well, we got Davey Quinn out right now. And by the way, anytime we get somebody on the podcast, they usually get hired again, you know, especially the coaches. So, Quinner, he looks like Daniel Day-Lewis. And then actually, I'm on my way to meet Andy right now. We got Kenny Holland coming on today, too.
Ooh, our friend of ours as well.
Yes.
Yeah,
Carlo's
baby.
Favorite. What do you term Ken Holland?
Make sure you ask him what the biggest mistake that, no, the biggest
regret.
The toughest decision he had to make in his life. And that was when he bought me out. That's right.
Oh, I'm going to certainly bring that up here.
You should lead with that, Cam. Lead with that.
I'm going to lead with it, of course.
All right, man. Boys. Thanks. Appreciate the time.
Have a good one, buddy.
See you.
Cam Jansen from the Cam and Strick podcast. Make sure to subscribe to that and also subscribe to the First Up podcast while you're there. 2-for-1 special on podcast subscription.
Is it Black Friday?
Cyber
Monday. Cyber Monday extended special. two-for-one podcast subscribes.
I love it. I love it. Yeah, the Evander Kane situation, man. If only he was taking my CFL picks, he would have been fine.
No, that guy doesn't need any advice with gambling. He's got to stop actually doing
agreed,
that.
Agreed, agreed. But, you know, is it really gambling if you're always winning? That's how I view my CFL selection. So we'll look ahead to the Argos and the Ticats. I think Enoch Mwamba will be joining us tomorrow morning, so that's exciting.
Enoch.
Star yes. linebacker. He'll be joining us at 7:20 to... You know, it's a big game. Big game, the Battle of QEW against the Ticats, and that is Sunday at 12:30. I was texting with your wife, Gina. She'll be joining me on Sunday, so I look forward to that afternoon together.
Nice. I'm working on us going to the Monday night football game in Buffalo, potentially.
I actually was looking at that yesterday. If you look at the prices of tickets, they're not like that crazy.
What are they? I didn't even look.
Like, I think you could sit 50-yard line for like $200. It's not like
dude,
insane.
I'm not sitting anywhere close to the field in the frigid temperatures that they're expecting.
Oh, we're talking about a box?
That's what I'm hoping for, yes.
Oh. Damn.
I'm not sitting outside Bang! For a 3-hour football game freezing my ass
off. But you were
off.
A Bills fan.
I am a Bills fan.
Clearly not that big of a fan. You Bills wouldn't go fan. See the Bills and the Patriots because it's too cold outside?
I would go see it in September, October, maybe in early November, but not... I mean, I don't know. We'll see what the weather is. If it's freezing cold, no, I'm not going.
Oh, it is December, so I don't think it's going to be 25 degrees, but I mean, that's surprising. You know, someone who's, you know, dressed up as Bill Mafia for Halloween, you would think they would be willing to weather the elements and sit in the cold. Buddy,
I'm
grab a
fan,
tube. You're good to go.
I'm a fan, but I'm not that crazy a fan. I tell you what, though, I might volunteer myself to get thrown through a table with Bills Mafia.
It's like, I'll put you on the IR right now for at least 6 to 8 weeks.
Yeah, blow my shoulder out again. Let's go, Ronnie! Let's go, Ronnie! That killed me! Let's go, it's my witness! He is broken in half!
There you go. That's what it'll sound like right there. Yes. We have James Herbert from CBS Sports. Covers the NBA for them. He'll join us to look at the Raptors, who have a very interesting matchup against the Memphis Grizzlies, a team without Ja Morant tonight. The Raps are 5.5-point favorites, which I find a little bit confusing, considering all the injury issues the Raptors are dealing of their own. I mean, OG Anunoby, Kem Birch, Gary Trent Jr. I don't know, it's a lot of attrition on both sides tonight. So for the Raps to be laying 5.5 seems a little exorbitant, if you ask me. Mm-hmm. But we'll see what James Herbert thinks. And plus, get into Jonas Valanciunas' performance last night. Wow! What is going on with JV? Extremely, extremely impressive stuff. Setting all types of NBA records and huge points and threes. Crazy stuff. And Golden State, they continue to roll. They have a very fascinating matchup with the Phoenix Suns, the two best teams in the NBA going head-to-head. So that's all coming up with James Herbert in about 20 minutes here on First Up.